Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, when was Nina's article about the diaries published in the New York Times, and why did it have an unusual kind of resonance among its readers? Nina Siegel is a writer from New York who lives in Europe. She's worked as a journalist since the 1990s and also published three novels. She received a Fulbright Fellowship to the Netherlands for her second novel in 2006 and has lived there since then. Siegel has been a regular freelance contributor to the New York Times from Amsterdam since 2012, covering art and culture, history, and society. She's received numerous grants and fellowships, including two McDowell Colony Fellowships and the postgraduate Jack Leggett Fellowship from Iowa. She's a 2021 recipient of the Whiting Foundation Creative Nonfiction Grant and a Humanity in Action Fellow. Siegel's latest book, which was just released in March, is The Diary Keepers, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Times, World War II in the Netherlands, as written by the people who lived through it. It's based on select writings from the archive of the NIOD Institute for War, Holocaust, and Genocide Studies, which contains more than 2,000 Dutch diaries from World War II. The book offers an intertwined non-fictional narrative of the Nazi occupation and the Dutch Holocaust as individuals experienced it day by day.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Nina. First, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from and what you studied and how you ended up in Amsterdam?
Sure. I was born and raised in New York, originally New York City and then Long Island. And my mother's side of the family came from Hungary. My dad's side of the family were New Yorkers for a few generations. I studied English literature at Cornell, and then I got my MFA in fiction at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and I'm currently doing a PhD at the University of Amsterdam in a research school called Heritage, Memory, and Material Culture. And I have been a journalist since 1994. I work currently for the New York Times as a pretty regular contributor to the culture section. Over the years, I've worked for maybe hundreds of magazines and newspapers, and I've also published three novels, and this is my fourth book, which is my first nonfiction book, and it's called The Diary Keepers, World War II, as written by those who lived through it.
How did you happen to end up in Amsterdam?
My second novel was about a Rembrandt painting called The Anatomy Lesson of Dr. Nicholas Tulp. And I got a Fulbright Fellowship to come here and work with the eminent Rembrandt scholar, Ernst von der Wetering, who sort of guided me through a lot of Rembrandt research in order to work on the novel. And I thought I would come for basically a year, ended up getting another grant to stay for a second year, and then ended up getting a job. And I didn't finish the novel for like 6 years. And then I kind of, in the meantime, settled down here. And now I've been living here for more than 15 years.
That happens. That happens in Europe, I think. Tell us about the diaries. How did you first find out about them?
So I do a fair amount of reporting on World War II for the Times. I've written about restitution issues related to old master paintings, but also about films and documentaries and sort of culture in connection to World War II. And in 2019, I was working on a piece about a photography exhibition that was photographs of the Jewish persecution during the Nazi occupation. And I went to NIOD, which is the Institute for War, Holocaust, and Genocide Studies in the Herrengracht. And I was interviewing two of the researchers there. And after the interview, Renee said to me, I just wanted to show you one more thing if you have a minute. And I said, sure. So I followed him downstairs into the archives of NIOD, which are actually in a former bank vault, which is at the bottom inside this institute. It's a beautiful 17th century canal mansion that has been converted various times for various reasons. And one of its former iterations was as a bank. So there's this massive bank vault door that leads you into an archive down in the basement, which is actually under sea level. And there they have archives from the beginning of the collection, which dates back to 3 days after liberation of the Netherlands, when they started to collect all kinds of firsthand documentation from the occupation. And one whole wall of the archive contains diaries and letters that were written from 1940 to 1945. And Renee just said, we're in the process of trying to transcribe these because they're an amazing resource, but people don't really have much access to them because a lot of them are handwritten and it's hard to read handwritten documents. And also, a lot of them were photocopied. So some of them are like on black paper with white writing. So it was quite hard to read them, and people got tired reading them, so they couldn't use them very much. So the institute was in the process of making them more legible, essentially for a wider public.
How did they get these documents?
So during the war period, there were two organizations at the same time that were talking about how to document this war, not just through official documentation, but also through the personal experiences of the people who were, ordinary citizens. And in March 1944, the culture minister, Gerrit Bolkestein, went on the radio, Radio Oranje, which was the official voice of the exiled government of the Netherlands on BBC. And he made a call out to the public and asked people to preserve their diaries and personal correspondence because after the war was over, they planned to set up an institute where they would collect these materials so future historians could use them for whatever purposes they wanted to use them for, I guess. And the idea was to sort of ex you know help describe how the nation had essentially stood up to the occupiers and lived through this very tumultuous time.
After you saw these, what did you do? How did you get involved?
So actually, the first thing I did was I wrote an article for the Times about the collection and the fact that it was being digitized. And what was interesting was that I wanted to use some excerpts from some of the diaries in particular. And as I worked on the piece, my editor kept asking me for more excerpts because he thought it was really amazing material. And I work on an article for about a week or two because I write features. But this one, we were working on it for about 9 months, and the editor wanted to use images. And so we got involved with the production team. And then they made this beautiful presentation in the New York Times on the digital website, also in the newspaper, where you could actually, well, in the digital version, you could move the pages and look at the diaries visually. And then actually, what happened was, Corona happened in March, mid-March. Everybody went back to their homes in 2020 and stayed indoors. And it was a very, as you remember, a very weird historic moment. And then my piece ran about a month into the pandemic, when people were having this very strange life-altering experience of being forced to live in a new environment in a new way that they had not experienced. And I think when we finally ran the article, it had a lot of resonance a new kind of resonance for readers trying to imagine what it would be like to be stuck indoors and hiding or living through a war. And so the piece got quite a lot of attention, and that helped me also find a publisher for the idea to expand it into a book.
Were they all written in Dutch?
Yeah, they're all written in Dutch. The ones that I used were all written in Dutch. So I translated 6 of the 7 diaries excerpts myself. And then one of the diaries was translated by Yad Vashem. And so I used excerpts from that with their permission.
How many diaries were there altogether?
The entire collection is 2,100 diaries.
Wow.
And a portion of those are actually written by Dutch people who were in Japanese internment camps in the former Dutch East Indies, the Indonesia, which was at the time a colony of the Netherlands. But Dutch people were interns. So some of them are prison camp diaries as well. And then the vast majority are from within the Netherlands. And so, but what was very interesting about them was that they were from a very broad cross-section of the populace. So there were diaries written by Jewish people, by NSBers, so Dutch Nazis. There were diaries from resistors and bystanders. There were people in factories and people in farms and people who were on the front lines. And so all different kinds of experiences and ages, and obviously men and women as well, and old people, young people. And the Institute did a very active job of collecting across the spectrum by doing a poster campaign and also going door to door and asking people to submit their diaries. So they also curated the collection. So they sent back the ones that they didn't think were so worthwhile, and they kept the ones that they thought were most useful. So that was all obviously very subjective. So we don't know what they sent back, but we have like an extraordinarily broad and interesting collection there that people really haven't used that much. I mean, a number of historians use it for, you know, quotes and sort of color and detail. But I think my book is the first to really use like very large chunks of text from these individual books.
So of these 2,000, how many did you actually read?
So I had 2 years to do the book. So I couldn't read a lot of them before I made a choice. But fortunately, the people who curated this collection had made summaries of about half of them. So there were 2 big files of summaries of all the diaries, and you could read those and sort of figure out who the people were. And they even had little critiques on them that said like the quality of the writing or the importance of the contribution. So also I talked a lot with the archivists who work there, who know the collection very well, and got their advice, because I had an idea of how I wanted to sort of mix different voices into a narrative that would give a kind of 360 degree perspective on certain moments of the war.
You said that the people were from all different ages and all different, let's say, backgrounds. Could you tell that from the diaries themselves, or was there extra information about the writers, or did you yourself do research into who wrote these?
Well, as I said, there were summaries of all the diaries. So those would include the names and the types of people and the backgrounds of the writers. So you could tell from the collected summaries. And also in 1954, there was a book that was published by NIOD that included excerpts. It's like this massive 700-page book of just excerpts, but they didn't name any of the people. They only described them. So they would put like, you know, farmhand, age 17 in Limburg or something. So you got a pretty good sense of like how diverse this collection was based on those excerpts as well.
Okay, so let's talk about the book itself. What was your goal in writing the book? Because this is, as you said, this is the first book that you've written that is not fiction. What was your goal?
Well, I've been living here for a long time, as I said, and I have been very interested in the fact that there's this sort of this underappreciated story of the Netherlands in World War II, which is that 75% of the Jewish population was murdered in concentration camps. And that is the highest percentage in Western Europe. So no other Western European country suffered as great a loss of their Jewish community in the war. And I think that is very contrary to what the general reputation is of the Netherlands. And I, at least I didn't know that. And I think many non-Dutch people didn't know that. And maybe a lot of Dutch people themselves don't know that. And of course, we have this very famous diary, the Diary of Anne Frank, that everybody reads and everybody knows, and it has become an iconic symbol of what it was like to be in hiding. And yet, her story is not representative of the larger experience of most Dutch Jews and most Dutch people. I mean, almost no Jews went into hiding as a family, and almost none of them were protected in the way the Franks were up until they were betrayed in 1944. And so my focus was to look at the persecution in the Netherlands and how it evolved and how not just Jews experienced it, but also how other Dutch people experienced it and why people joined the Nazi Party, why people chose to be in the resistance or not be in the resistance, how different parts of the culture collaborated or complied, and how that history has been explored since. So the book is a way of looking at different parts of social culture in the war period and how people get involved in a massive machinery of death without necessarily being in countries where that itself is happening. And I'm a Jewish person. My mother was a Holocaust survivor. She was in hiding in Hungary. My grandfather was liberated from Mauthausen. My grandmother was in hiding. Most of my European side of the family was wiped out by the Holocaust. So it was a personal examination also. I mean, I live here and I'm raising a Jewish child here, and so I wanted to figure out how to relate to that history myself.
Tell us a little bit about how the book is structured.
So I read all the diaries that I was using, and then I took excerpts that I thought were relevant to certain moments in the history of the war, and I put them in chronological order. And so sometimes really amazing and surprising things happened as a result of seeing these diaries back to back. So sometimes, for example, there's a moment in the lead up to the February strike, there was a great deal of fighting in the Jewish quarter because a bunch of NSB thugs came and attacked the quarter, and a lot of young men in the quarter fought back. So for several days, a couple of weeks, there was this fight going on between the two sides, and eventually the occupiers pulled up the bridges and closed off the quarter. And then after that, they arrested 400 Jewish men randomly and shipped them off to camps where almost all but two died. And then the strike followed that experience. So what was interesting to me was that I've heard a lot about the strike all
What year
these
is
years,
this?
1941. February 1941. So then the strike is very famous as like a moment when non-Jewish people protested the persecution of the Jews, and it's known as one of the only uprisings against the Nazis in Europe. But what happened when I put this moment together with all the different voices from the diaries was that you could see from the policeman's perspective what's happening, and also from a worker's perspective what's happening, and also from a Jewish fighter what's happening. So you get this like really interesting mix of voices about the same moment off like actually taking place in the same exact space. So what I tried to do is to take those moments where we see things from different vantage points and use them as like a narrative. And then my part is that I give the context historically, socially, and somewhat philosophically to try to give people a sense of like how to understand this moment and what it means. And then also I interweave different observations of my own experience of living here and going to some of the places where these events took place in the war. So, and also, like, for example, there's a section where a lot of things are happening at Westerbork, which was the main transit camp where Jews were sent before they were sent on to the death camps in the east. And one of the diary writers writes from there, but then there are other voices that are like in different parts of Amsterdam reflecting on different things. Like, and the contrasts sometimes are very powerful. So I write it in some ways in a novel. I mean, I put it together in a kind of novelistic way. So you hear these different voices and you really engage with the diary writers as characters. And, you know, periodically I jump in to explain and help the reader along the way. So it's a very narrative book.
How many diarists were included altogether?
There are seven main diary writers, and then sometimes I use different voices to like add. So there's a couple other ones that come in periodically to add context also.
So are they, the writers, both subjective and objective? In other words, are some of them writing as though they were journalists and others more from a personal point of view?
Yeah, I think each diary is a mix, but that's what's kind of interesting about diaries, that they go back and forth between sort of trying to report and trying to give their own personal reflection on it. But my tendency was to choose diaries that were more reportorial, so more descriptive of what's happening around the person, and rather than diaries that are very internal and self-reflective. Yeah, because it's more of a narrative, descriptive book than it. But there are obviously very intimate things that are happening to each of these people, and otherwise you wouldn't be able to connect to them as human beings.
This is kind of related to my next question. As a journalist yourself, what do you think of diaries as a source material?
Well, diaries are, I think, they're a tricky source material to some extent, because you don't know how, you know, true what the person is saying is, or how much context they have for what they're saying. So sometimes they're reporting rumor, or sometimes they're reporting what they, you know, secondhand information or propaganda information that they, you know, because there was a lot of propaganda. So, you know, for example, one of the Nazi police officers frequently quoting propaganda, and I could actually go back to propaganda sources from the period and see that he was, like, you know, very clearly reading this and writing it in his diary. Or, I mean, some of the Jewish figures who were caught up in the raids and stuff, they had very little information about what was happening to them, but they also heard a lot of information about what was happening to other people, or you don't know always whether that's factual. So a lot of it you have to check. And then the other part is that in diary writing, people don't necessarily tell you who they're talking about. So, like, in a lot of cases, a name will come up over and over again. Like, for example, Yule did this, Yule did that, Yule said this, and I can't figure out who's Yule. Is that your cousin? Is that your sister? Is that your, you know? So you have to sort of spend quite a bit of time with the diary to figure out exactly who they're referring to, and then do a lot of research around the diary and the diary writer to figure out, like, where they're placed in social, in the society. So, but some of those revelations can be extraordinary. For example, Yule in this case turned out to be one of the leaders of the NSVO, and the diary writer was a Nazi woman, socialite in The Hague, and she's writing about her connection to a very important Nazi woman in the Dutch Nazi movement. So what's interesting about them is, I think that they can be slippery sources, but then again, so can other documentation, right? So if you have official documents from the war period, those are likely to be Nazi documents, or they're likely to be, you know, with the German accounting of things, also not necessarily reliable. So I think they're interesting sources, but for a long time they were ignored because they were considered too subjective. And I think There's a range of subjectivity that exists in diaries. Some are more and some are less subjective, but also many of them contain like rich source information that if you don't read from a first person perspective, you really miss, I think.
The book came out just a couple of months ago in February, and I checked, and it will be available in Spain next February in 2024. Oh. Has it been translated, or will it be translated? And if so, into what languages? Or you don't know yet?
Yes, it's already been translated into Dutch, and it's been published in the Netherlands just like a week after it came out in English. And it's going to be translated into Italian. We have an Italian publisher, and it's going to be translated into Polish. And we already have a Polish translator. And unfortunately, we don't have a Spanish translator yet. So if anybody knows one who might be interested, that we would, I mean, a publisher in Spain, we're interested. I'm also trying to find, we're working on translations to Hebrew and German.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
I think it's really important to realize that a lot of times when we are reading history, we're reading it from a very contemporary vantage point. So we know what happens now in the Holocaust, and we know what the end result of World War II was. But, you know, in 1940, 1941, 1942, 1943, people didn't know. And so what I think is so valuable about diaries is that they allow us to read history as it took place and unfolded moment by moment. So, you know, it's very easy to look back on that period and say, oh, this should have happened, or that should have happened, or people should have behaved this way. But when you read diaries, you see that people had to make these profound and difficult choices moment by moment, and that they were grappling with them in the way that everybody grapples with their own lives. I mean, people didn't know if Hitler would be successful ultimately. People didn't know if they were living in a new world, you know. People didn't know about the, you know, gas chambers in 1941. They did later. So when you're reading diaries, you get a feeling of living in a world rather than reading a history. And I think that's what makes them really compelling and powerful.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.